on this episode of China Unscripted, a secret message in a map, swimming naked at Mar-a-Lago, and joining us all the way from Chile, a special guest to talk about China's sharp power in Latin America. Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshta.
Did you guys hear about what happened at the London School of Economics this week?
Some very boring lectures about economics.
I heard about it, but I just, why don't you summarize it for the listeners who don't know as much as I do.
So there is a public art project called The World Turned Upside Down that is a giant globe outside the London School of Economics, only it's turned upside down. How clever is that?
Why is it upside down?
Actually, that part I don't know.
I mean, is there really a right side up and upside down for the globe?
There is. I went to this Australian meat pie place in New York, and they had a map that had like Australia at like the center and top, and it was wrong.
but more importantly, how was their meat pie?
Not very good. It's filled with Vegemite. No meat, just Vegemite.
That's disgusting. You know, 1 year ago, we were actually in Australia. Or we just left Australia. We were in New Zealand.
New Zealand. That's incredible to think about. Yeah.
Let's come back to that, because I feel like we're already getting off tangent. Because what
off
I wanted
tangent,
to...
Off-tangent, Shelley? Oh,
I know. That's not like us at
all. You made
a
little mistake. That's so horrible. Anyways.
So the London School of Economics has an upside-down globe, which I argue is not upside down.
Well, it's wrong for several reasons, because there is a right side up, and it's the Earth is flat.
Oh boy! So what is the story about this globe?
Not that interesting compared to flat Earth theory, but there was some controversy because Taiwan was colored a different color than mainland China, indicating that perhaps it was a different country.
That's outlandish. China. Outrageous.
That is what some people thought. And then
some people
pressured.
Being...
Well, you know.
The people at the Confucius Institute?
Chinese students at LSE. And I think it became like a bigger brouhaha. But the point was that they were pressuring LSE and the artists to change the color of Taiwan.
Well, that's certainly important, that like a map has a color change.
I mean, you can't have a map that doesn't promote the peaceful reunification of China.
I mean, what about the human rights of the people whose feelings were hurt by that?
That's, you know, Matt, that's a good point.
What about Taiwanese people?
You mean they're Chinese people, Shelley?
Yeah, uh-huh. They're Chinese people. So fantastic.
So, you know, that's like... stupid world news for this week. But
and on this week's stupid world news,
well, stupid China news, I suppose we should have that as a segment on our podcast.
That would just be like news. Stupid China news,
just like what's this week's stupid China news. I'm sure we would not run out of things to talk about.
That's probably very true.
And now Matt is writing that down so we don't forget. But
that's good.
The globe thing I wanted to talk about because it reminded
the flat
me
Earth. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It reminded me that for Christmas, Matt got me a scratch-off map of the world because I like to travel and, you know, you can scratch off the countries that you've been to. Except when I opened the map and unrolled, it's a pretty big map. The first thing I noticed was what, Matt?
He so doesn't know you or what you think.
Okay. You don't remember being embarrassed about this once I pointed it out?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
I mean, even I know what she's talking about. And I wasn't there.
So I unroll the map, and the first thing I notice is the 9-dash line is on this map of the world made by a UK company. And Taiwan is conveniently not labeled.
Nice. The 9-dash line being China's territorial claims in the
right.
South China Sea.
So the 9-dash line covers, this is great that we describe this in a podcast, but it goes from the outside of Taiwan, so Taiwan is inside the 9-dash line, all the way down to the edge of the Philippines and up back through Vietnam. So the entire South China Sea, basically.
The funny thing about describing this on a podcast is, like, anyone who understands the geography of the South China Sea region enough to know what you're talking about also probably knows about the Nine Dash Line.
Yeah, whatever. Look it up on a map, people.
Look it up on Baidu maps.
And so Taiwan wasn't even labeled?
No. It was just, and I scratched off, like, after this whole globe controversy, I, like, remembered this, and I scratched off the map for China and Taiwan to see, and they're the same color underneath.
Wow, and this is a UK company that made it?
Yeah, and I can't help but think that, like, how did that happen? Like, they just manufacture their maps in China, and
we,
like,
should
Chinese factories are just like, this is the map.
I think,
like,
I think we should find out. But this kind of reminds me of how there have been book publishers. I think there's a book publisher in Australia that had the printing of the book at a Chinese
printer. Yeah,
a
lot of publishers print in China now.
Right, and so it's cheaper there. But now those publishers, even though the books are in English and even though the books aren't going to be sold in China, the publishers don't want to publish books that have controversial content that is critical of the communist regime.
Yeah, so I posted this on Twitter and some people were talking about how they also did things like, you know, bought a globe off of Amazon and then it came and it turned out it was made in China and had the Nine Dash Line on it. Stuff like that.
All the subtle ways of propaganda.
Well, I was thinking maybe this is how they get their territorial claims accepted by the world.
It's no longer on just an ancient map.
Right.
It's on all the maps.
It's on all the maps. You just make all the maps.
I mean, that's kind of true. There was a viewer who sent us a Facebook message a while ago. I think he was in Vietnam, and he either bought a globe or was at a market where there was a globe, and that also had the Nine Dash Line. So, you know, just because of the vast number of things being manufactured and printed in China, you can actually dramatically change the perceptions of people who aren't paying attention and just subtly push this idea.
Do you know what this means?
What does it mean?
It means we can get everybody to believe that RoboCop is actually called Robert Cop.
Oh my gosh. I like Robert Cop more.
I'd like to actually get a Robert Cop. You know, we've only seen the pictures. We don't actually own a Robert Cop.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to think that was probably a limited run.
Possibly. But this does...
But it's the furniture of law enforcement.
But this does make me... what you're saying about the publishers, that, like, that's so much power to give China. Like, you know, oh, it's cheap to manufacture something there. And then they start making political demands, and it's like, well, we either cave or we have to pay more. And I'm not going to pay more.
But consider it from the perspective of a map company. Like, they have no interest in the politics of this. Like, they just want a map that they can sell a little cheaper than their competitor. And, like, the politics just, like, aren't a thing. It's a scratch-off map. Like, who cares whether Taiwan and China are separate? Who cares whether Serbia and Kosovo are separate?
Who cares if maps are accurate?
I mean, but what is accuracy anyway?
That's right. Well, I know on the show we've had a lot of problems. Like, anytime we needed to make a map that has Indian borders.
Oh no, the Kashmir border.
Yeah,
oh.
it's.
We always get it wrong, somebody.
But like, Seamus has been a lot more careful lately. Seamus is our video editor for China Uncensored, and so he's also seen all the blowback. So now when we do maps, you can see, like, the last several times we've done India, it's like India one color, China another, and then all the disputed stuff is like a diagonal thing. And there's also disputes with Pakistan, right? So it's extra complicated.
I can see that it's complicated, and maybe, like, disputed territory is, you know, a pain to deal with in maps. So that's why the bold choice of just putting the Nine Dash Line in there.
And not labeling Taiwan at all.
And just, like, assuming that people are not going to notice.
Or care.
Is the bold choice, and apparently the way to go.
Yeah. I guess so. But we've been to the Nine Dash Line. Does that mean, Shelley, you can scratch off the Nine Dash Line?
Tried to scratch it off, and funny enough, the Nine Dash Line is not erasable.
Ain't that the truth? There is one thing I really like about the map, though.
What?
It's accurately flat.
Oh, okay. It is a bad projection, though. It's, like, pretty distorted.
Well, all maps are distorted.
True.
Because, like, it's difficult to take a circular Earth disk and put it on a rectangular map.
How you doing, Accuracy Ninja?
Oh my god, that sigh came from the bottom of my soul. Okay, so we were in New Zealand a year ago.
Oh yeah, and Australia, but more accurately, New Zealand a year ago. It was the same trip. That was sloppy and too much information. We were in New Zealand a year ago.
And I really miss that New Zealand dairy milk.
Oh man, it was so good, straight out of the udder. Well, technically, they put it in a vat first, but they didn't pasteurize it.
Straight out of the antiseptic tank.
Yeah. How would you describe that milk, Matt? I'm giving it to you.
It was the best milk I've ever had in my entire life.
Would you say it was utterly delicious?
Oh, you were setting me up for that, too.
I know. It was a gift.
Uh-huh. And?
Well, when I think of New Zealand, like, I think of the Lord of the Rings soundtrack, because that's all we played in the car as we were driving around.
I mean, that's even true. When before we went to Hobbiton, when we were first in just Auckland, in the suburbs of Auckland, there was that one park that we filmed in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It would just, I was like, I think this is Middle Earth. Like the
it was so green. It's actually my computer desktop background.
Yeah, it looks unreal.
Yeah, we're looking at it now, and it's so, there's
oh,
no
Oh man, this picture we're
no
looking
color.
At right now.
But there's no color editing here. Like it's just, it was this green.
You should see this. It is so green. It's, you'd think it was color edited, but it's not.
It's not.
This
no,
picture
hashtag no
see.
Filter. okay, this is great. We just like, this is the podcast where we just describe visual things.
I happen to have this great souvenir I brought from, look at it, isn't it amazing?
Wow.
Chris right now is dressed like Elrond from Lord of the Rings.
That was perhaps the strangest episode of China Censored we ever did.
Because it was so confusing to viewers.
Yeah, where I dressed like Elrond and go to the set of Hobbiton. Though, the Chinese tourists there were really impressed.
They loved it. So many Chinese tourists. I got like all this footage of Chinese tourists going up to Chris, who was, by the way, the only tourist there who actually was dressed up. And
apparently people don't cosplay to this, which is strange.
I know. And so, they were all just wanting to take pictures with you. A lot of them didn't even know like what Lord of the Rings was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was the one guy who's like, it's the guy from Game of Thrones.
No, I overheard this in Chinese, and we put it in the video, I think.
It is true.
It is not a made-up joke that, like, you know, people were looking at you and, like, somebody was like, I did not know who you were, obviously. And then her son was like, yeah, he's the guy from Game of Thrones.
What I find most amusing about, though, is, like, if only they knew who they were actually taking a picture with.
No, it's fine. Just because Elrond is an anti-China subversive
black fan,
you know, something in elf robes, like orc in elf robes.
Very universe specific, Shelley.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go with the theme, right?
That's right.
Yeah. The intersection of people who get that joke. You know, I'm just picturing the Venn diagram
of people who
know about like the Dalai Lama being called a wolf in monk's clothes.
And people who are Lord of the Rings fans?
Yeah.
I would venture to say most people who know about the Dalai Lama thing are probably Lord of the Rings fans.
I mean, who isn't a Lord of the Rings fan, right?
Well, now after the movies, I think that's probably pretty true. Like,
though
people know what orcs are now.
No one is near to the level of fandom that Stephen Colbert is.
Oh, yeah, no, I am not. I never finish reading the Silmarillion.
Though you also told us, Shelley, and this is great, that the elves are flat earthers.
That was our first podcast where we talked
about
that.
Oh my gosh, it was.
I know, going full circle.
Wait a minute. Does that mean that it's been almost a year since we did?
Actually, it is almost a year.
This is basically the 1 year anniversary of China Unscripted.
Oh my god, we should have led with that.
No, it'd be like another month because we had to come back from Australia and New Zealand.
No, it was pretty close because Matt wasn't on our first podcast because he lost his voice. Remember
that?
That's
right. I do remember that. We were actually talking about that the other day.
I think that was basically right after we got back.
Yeah, the first one we published was April 19th, 2018.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, but we recorded it a little before then, so.
Yeah. So, this is basically, we've done 28 episodes in a year. Although now we're trying to do it weekly, if possible. Mm-hmm. So we've sped it up a bit.
How many shows do you think we can do? We're trying to do like 3 to 4 China Uncensoreds a week, 1 to 2 America Uncovereds a week, 1 China Unscripted. How much can we do?
The threshold of sanity.
The three of us. How much can we
possibly
do? I mean,
I think what we do is we split off into like, and like, so we spin off like something that Matt has to host and something that I have to host, and then we can make 3 times as many shows, right?
That's great.
Yeah, that's how it works, right?
That's great.
Well, the trick actually, that I feel like it's been a bit easier lately because we've been now hiring some people, and you know, if you look at like America Uncovered, you see that we have a new writer, and a researcher and a video editor. So now we're starting to build up this team so we can expand the number of things. But I got to be honest, like it's a lot. Like I feel overwhelmed all the time by the
amount
of stuff.
And I have another job, so yes. That's fun. No, actually, I think what we should do is install a camera in Chris's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we just
I don't like where this is going, but
neither do I, but let's see where it's going.
We just like record you talking in your sleep, and that could be like an entire other podcast, like you know,
I have to work on saying intelligent things while I'm asleep,
or like
wow, mangoes,
or it could be like that could be like the fun little, you know, the Easter eggs inside, like you know,
it
when
is
you listen
Easter.
To when you listen to like a album to hear like the, you know, Paul is dead when you play the record backwards, or you know, like it's mostly you snoring. Mm-hmm. But occasionally there could be like a gem of China information in there.
Very interesting. I'm gonna say no to this idea.
I mean, but you already sleep, so it's not like you'd have to do more work.
That's true, but I'd feel so much pressure to perform that I wouldn't be able to sleep, and then the show's ruined.
Or like Insomnia with Chris Chappell could also be a successful show, I feel like, live streaming in the middle of the night.
There's so many great ideas for ways in which we can expand.
I feel like somebody suggested we do an ASMR.
What is that? Is that the weird sound stuff?
It's the weird sound stuff.
The weird sound stuff.
The weird soothing sound.
Have been told I have a very soothing voice.
There we go. That's another channel
it's
idea.
It's much less soothing when you do it that way. It's a little creepier.
Oh, shoot.
Well, speaking of trips we've been to, actually, I wasn't on this one. Remember when you guys went to Mar-a-Lago?
How could I forget?
What I want to know is how come you didn't get inside?
Well, yeah, because it seems to be a little easier than I thought.
Right.
Right. I mean, so... For the background, Chris, you and I went to Palm Beach 2 years ago, right? Was it 2 years ago when Xi Jinping was visiting Donald Trump at his Florida estate? But there was a ton of security. It was you couldn't get close to Mar-a-Lago or the O Hotel where Xi Jinping was staying. But it seems like...
In fact, at one point, I did get escorted away from a place by the military.
By the military, yeah. That we do have that on camera. So if you want to check out that China Uncensored episode...
That's right. I should Instagram that.
It was a great moment. But
I remember you calling me and being like, we got a great shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the police were escorting Chris out, I turned the camera on. And I just put it on auto. And I just like held it over my shoulder as if I'm just like... Oh, I'm just carrying this back.
Oh, I took a selfie.
But it was you took a selfie with the police there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was still walking, but yeah, I managed.
Wow,
yeah.
Look at us. So professional.
Very professional.
Anyway, so apparently all you needed to do was go tell them you wanted to use the pool.
Well, shoot. We really missed our opportunity.
And with 4 cell phones, like a USB stick with malware and no
swimsuit.
What
are you talking about, Shelley?
The woman who snuck into Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, you should have led with that. So there's a woman who snuck into Mar-a-Lago claiming she wanted to use the pool.
But I feel like people know what I'm talking about because
they've all watched this week's China News headlines.
That's definitely why, because everybody watches every episode of China Uncensored.
I assume. I assume the people who listen to this podcast probably also watch China Uncensored, mostly.
Probably that's true, actually. But every episode...
I don't know. We are one of the top China podcasts in the world.
The top 16 or whatever, yeah. It's okay. Anyway, the point is, I felt like most people knew about the story because my, like, I was at the gym and my trainer asked me about it, and he's not, you know, a China watcher, so I feel like that's, this is permeated out into, like, publicly available information.
Okay.
But yeah, I think, do you guys think she was a spy?
That I feel could be libel. Or slander, I forget which is what.
It would be slander if we say it on the podcast, but libel if we've written it down into a scripted show like China Uncensored.
What if on the podcast I write it down and, but...
Nobody says anything?
Yeah.
then I think it's libel.
Then it's called a waste of time.
I call it a secret.
So at any rate, no, there's no indication that she's a spy.
No.
She just had four cell phones and a USB with malware that she brought to Mar-a-Lago while President Trump was there for the weekend.
She could have just been like an intense Trump groupie.
How do you figure?
Well, I mean, he's pretty popular actually among like Chinese people.
Well,
Chinese
what
Americans.
I mean is, like, how does having all the malware indicate that she's a groupie?
Well, I mean, like, I probably have a USB stick with malware on it. Like, I don't know that they were. They prove that, like, it was, she was trying to infect anything with malware. But my only thing about why she might not be a spy is because that seems really incompetent. Like, you know,
it's
a
not
spy.
Good spy,
yeah, a spy would show up with a swimsuit, at least, right?
Oh, yeah, that was the thing. She said she was there for the pool, but they found not a swimsuit on her.
Or, yes.
Unless she likes to swim in the buff.
I don't think that you could get away with that at Mar-a-Lago. It seems like, you know, it's a classy establishment.
Yeah. I mean, it is in Florida, though.
I don't know what you're talking about. Are there...
The Florida is so classy that you're right, that they only have fully swimsuited swimmers.
You're from California. If you think of any state that is probably has more nudists, I'm going to go with California. No?
No, that's true.
Florida man sneaks into Mar-a-Lago to swim naked. I could believe it.
I mean, yeah.
All right. Well, we should get our guest on the line. How about that? Is that a good idea?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's time.
I think we're done talking about swimming nude at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, we're not done. We'll carry on later after the podcast.
I see.
For hours, mm-hmm. While the Lord of the Rings music plays.
One of the best China podcasts. Wait, don't. I'm pretty sure we could get, like, in trouble
for that.
Wait, let me change a note then. There.
That was, I don't know whether to say it was better or worse.
Well, it's like me writing down my libel here on the podcast. It's kosher, right?
It's halal.
And let's get our guest on the line. Today, we have joining us a very special guest who will be telling us about China's economic and political influence in Latin America, Sacha Hanning Nunez. She's a writer, researcher, and project manager at the Global Affairs Department of Foundation for Progress, Chile. And so, Sacha, say hello.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm good. How's everyone else?
Fantastic.
Fine.
Shelley takes a long time to check in with herself. Anyway, Sacha, please tell us a bit about yourself.
What can I say? I'm a journalist, a major in journalism. I used to live in China for 1 year almost. I'm actually, my specialization in college is history and economics of Asia. So I have always been really concerned about the matter, and as I grew up, I started to see how China, especially China and Japan, started to like become more important for Chile's and Latin American economic development. So I started to research about it. I joined the ALADA, that's the Association for Latin American Association for Asia and African Studies, to know better about it. And I started to notice there were the thing I saw on my environment was much deeper on legal matters and culture matters and everything else.
This is China's influence in Latin America.
China's influence in Latin America, yes. Asia, I think Asia's influence, but China mostly. Because Japan has also a big influence in Latin America, but it's quite different because their interests are not as profound as China's interests in Latin America.
So I know recently Xi Jinping has invited Latin America to join up with the One Belt, One Road initiative, for win-win mutual cooperation. What do you think that's going to look like?
Well, Latin America has since the 70s, tried to enhance the relationship with China, mostly because, the political situation in Latin America in the 70s, in America in general, was really, really related to the Cold War. And especially in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil, there were the first socialists, leaders in a long time, and they say, okay, we have to make economical agreements, who do we do them with? And China was on the other side of the road. They were starting their economical reforms, and they say, okay, we can make business with them. So Chile was the first one, actually, and then Brazil, that's the biggest country, Latin America, and Argentina, they started to strengthen their relationships with China. So I'm not surprised China wants to put Latin America in the One Belt, One Road initiative, because all the countries, after 40 years of relationships, every single country, Latin America, has at least 20% of their exports related to China or depending on China. Chile and Brazil have more or less a third of the relationship depending on China's decisions. So we have our hands tied. We cannot say, okay, we don't want to be part of it.
So what has these trade relationships Latin American countries have with China, how has that affected those countries?
I can give you one example.
Great.
Of the work we're doing. For example, in 2007, around 10% of Peru exports were sent to China. And in 2017, they got to 30%. So every single country in Latin America, but not every single country, has at least doubled their relationships with China. In the last 10 years or 12 years. So what do you see in the context of what do you see in the streets? More factories are coming to Latin America. You don't see the media judging China as it did on the first decade of the 21st century. You see a lot of economical chambers opening up to convince Chilean investors to go to China and to export to China. The same thing has happened in Brazil. Brazil now is the biggest trade partner in Latin America with China. But it's not only economical, because it gets to the political phase. And you start to see political relationships with China and cultural relationships in China. I don't know if you know about the Confucius Institutes, the trouble that came out of that.
So there are Confucius Institutes in Latin America?
In every single country. I would say there are more than 20 only in South America. In Chile, there are two Confucius Institutes. The first one in the biggest university in Chile, and the second one in the biggest private university in Chile. And if you see the bulletins they send you by email, actually they sent me one yesterday, it's all about how amazing is to China as a country and how amazing are Chinese investors, and why should Chileans not only provide assistance for these investors, but also go to China to study, to understand their system, to understand why their system works. And there is actually a master's degree in Chile, an MBA, that has a partnership with the Tsinghua University, and every single student of this, this is the best university in Chile, Universidad Católica, every single student of this master goes to the university in China for 2 months, to the best university in China, one of the best. And when they come back, these businessmen, and you ask them about, what do you think about repression in China? Or what do you think about the dictatorship and the everything else? Or the economical dependence on China? They will, they would answer you, well, you know, at least they don't have crime. Yeah, they are very solid state. We should replicate some of their policy here in Chile or in Brazil. And it's not just the businessmen. I'm talking about the biggest businessmen. I don't know if you know Chile's copper industry.
I can't say I know much about the Chilean copper industry.
Well, it's big. It's one of the China gets all its copper from Chile. And I would say 60% of Chilean copper gets directly to China's real estate industry. And the biggest businessman in the Chilean industry of copper is called Andronico Luksic, from a Croatian family. He is a big fan of China's system, and he sponsored the Tsinghua University to get a faculty of the Tsinghua University to Chile. And that's not the only country that's happened in Latin America.
Well, so it sounds to me what you're saying is that China is very good at spreading its soft power in Latin America, that they spread these feelings that China is a great place, they've got a good system. From what you've told me, what China is bringing in is jobs, trade, money. It actually sounds pretty good. Like, is there a downside to this relationship with China?
Well, I wouldn't say there is a bad side to this partnership yet, but a lot of Chilean journalists, I'm speaking about Chile because it's what I have the closest. Mm-hmm. But Chilean and Argentinian journalists have traveled going to China to get a visa to go to China because some news that have come out lately on the Uyghur case, for example, or on China's digital dystopic power.
So basically, if Chilean journalists are critical of China, they just don't get access to
but
China.
Now they cannot be because, for example, in Chile, journalism is very like concentrated. So what the Chinese government has done is just invite the journalists to really fancy weddings and really fancy trips and everything. So that's the first thing that has happened. And the second one is silent and has to be with the public the public offers of infrastructure. You know, many Chinese companies have invested in Chile's or Latin America public infrastructure. You know, the Venezuelan case, of course. In Chile, most of our public mobile antennas or towers, most of them, are made by Huawei.
So the cell towers, the mobile phone towers in Chile are from Huawei.
Most of them. Huawei came to Chile in 2008. It actually was the first country it came when it decided to establish in Latin America. And its biggest business is not cell phones, but public infrastructure. And they make all the cell phone towers. I don't know. I could understand they have all our data because of that. And they send that data to China. And the dependence is also very important because, for example, if Chile or any other Latin American country that has 30% of their exports depending on China's growing or GDP or anything, decide to cut relationship with China, I think, for example, what happened to the Nguyen, in the Nguyen case, that China just cut early relation, economic relation. If that happened to a Latin American country, and it would just be a disaster. I mean, Venezuela is a subcase of what would happen if China just decided to cut any relationship.
So Chile, 30% of your trade is with China.
Well, that's just the exports to China.
Exports.
Right? Exports to China, yes.
Are we talking...
But Chilean GDP is mostly composed by exports, copper exports.
Is it all like resources? Things like copper.
Yeah, mostly natural resources. Copper, salmon, and now cherries. They love our cherries.
Salmon and cherries, really?
Yeah.
That sounds like a great combination.
Actually, it does.
On a copper plate.
And avocados also. They love wine and avocados. Avocados. They also buy most of our avocados. So for exports, it would be really hard if China just decided to cut any relations. If, for example, we decided, okay, China, you're a dictatorship. We don't want to have any more relationships with you. That would be a disaster because we have like a 10 or 12 year deal for copper exports. But there is a third reason why China could be dangerous for Latin America, and it's the China's sharp power. Because I say sharp power because I don't think soft power is the best term to refer to China's influence, because China lies a lot and manipulates information and buys influence in order to get this power. It's not just like, okay, our country's the best, take a card, visit us, make a tour. No, it gets farther. They lie to public, they manipulate the governments, and they buy their influence. So I think it's sharp power, the definition, the exactly definition of what China is doing in Latin America.
Well, what's an example, Sasha, of Chinese either government or Chinese state-owned businesses influencing Chilean politicians to have them change their policy on something in particular?
I would have to think, but if you only see a trade, if you see that or trade, we have an open trade agreement with China. So China make lots of lobby. It's not confirmed because, you know, it's really hard to get to the data, but we have this new agreement with 11 countries, the TPP in Spanish, TPP 11 with Japan, United States and everything. And in the last months, there has been a really, really, really big campaign against Chile signing this agreement. And you know, China cannot sign this agreement because the country doesn't get all the requirements to sign it. You have to like have proper workers' law and have a proper employment system and everything. And China doesn't have it, so the country cannot sign.
Right. I mean, my understanding of the Trans-Pacific Partnership was that it was set up in part to go around China so that countries could have other trade relationships that weren't dominated by China.
Exactly. And Chile was one of those countries, and now they have to sign it next week. And by instance, China invited every single parliament to go, parliament member to go to China or makes lobby on it. But I think that the most, just an example of how China can relate. If you see that the Venezuelan case is most obvious because they actually have to do a lot with what's happening now. I mean, their CTE company is the one that's making the public cards.
The like a national identification card?
The identification is made by CTE. Mm. And actually, when they wanted to change their constitution, the foreign affairs minister had to go to China and showed him the agreement for the constitution change. And I think that's pretty obvious.
So you're saying the officials had to go to China to get their approval for laws before even going to parliament?
In China, at least with the constitutional change they wanted to do around 2 years ago, they had to go to China, show them the card of what they were going to do. And it's not the only case.
Incredible. They had to go to China. I mean, couldn't they just email it?
No, because they email it to the Venezuelan ambassador in China, and he goes to the foreign minister and shows him, okay, so this is what we're going to do. Do you approve it? Okay, we approve it. You know, Venezuela has a millionaire debt with China. That's not the case in other countries. But the thing is, in Latin America, our states in general are not quite solid. I mean, we have lots of corruption problems, stability problems, economic problems. So I think it's really attractive for a country like China to invest here because they can. It has been proved that you can have more power and you can manage more your influence when you try to do it so with a unstable state.
I understand there's been a lot of Chinese businesses coming into Chile. Is that right?
Yes. Well, Chile is much more stable than I would say Bolivia or Peru or Venezuela.
Definitely Venezuela.
But it's still an emerging country, so they can trade. It's safe for them. If I had to say the main companies in Chile, Chinese company, are obviously CTE and Huawei, the biggest companies, and then you have lots of traders everywhere. You have Xiaomi.
Xiaomi, it's making the mobile phones that look like knockoff Apple phones.
Yeah. The OnePluses. But they're coming to Chile in a few months with a lot of stores. Actually, even Huawei is concerned about it. They're coming with everything.
So which kind of mobile phone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
Okay. But you could replace it with a Xiaomi for half the cost and one-tenth the security.
Yeah, obviously. Actually, Xiaomi is coming with 46 stores on the whole country. Yeah. And apps also. We have a lot of apps in Chile. I don't know, Mobag is in Chile. This big transport company is also coming. Didi. They're all coming to Chile. And you can see it on the streets, the Chinese icons and everything.
How do people in Chile feel about that? Like, do they think it's like a good opportunity, or is there any backlash?
It depends on the people, because you know, lucky for us, our left parties are still really caught on the old idea of what the left should be. So they don't trade with China. They don't want anything to do with China still. The Communist Party, Socialist Party, and everything. But normal people, they actually enjoy Chinese prices mostly. We have like this saying in Chile. I don't know, Japanese technology, Chinese price. American technology, Chinese price. It has become something good for us in terms of what we can access to.
I mean, it sounds good. They knock off American and Japanese intellectual property, make it cheap in China, and sell it to Chile. It's a win-win
for
Chile and China.
All our public system, public transport system in 12 years will be Chinese-made. It will be a Chinese electrical fleet.
Well, so is this at least creating jobs for Chilean workers?
I would say it is. Mm-hmm.
And how are these workers being treated?
Hold on, Sasha, there's a lot of noise happening in the back.
Yeah, I know. I know. Sorry, sorry. My cat is like doing something.
Cats.
Yeah, she has like this like bell that she knocks all the time.
It seems exactly like what cats want to do. Like as soon as you're doing something important, they just want to like jump on your keyboard.
Yeah, yeah. She hasn't done it yet, but she's looking at me with a like strange face.
She knows you're talking about China.
She knows.
She's been bought off.
Yeah, she's a spy. So on daily basis, Chilean people are not concerned about Chinese influence because we're not used to it. We're not used to being like, I don't know, influenced by the Chinese. So what we see in the on the daily life is cheaper buses, cheaper technology, and cheaper everything. So most people like it. But there are other people that say, wait, I mean, you're selling your state to Chinese because every single public infrastructure work is made by the Chinese. And all these companies are coming, and you know they have to respond to the Chinese state. Well, people in Chile don't know the Chinese companies have to respond to the Chinese state. They don't realize because in Chile we have an open market, so companies essentially don't have to tell anything to the state but pay the taxes. So I think the fact of not knowing what kind of Chinese company tell their state is really damaging the way Chileans relate to China. In the sense of we cannot conceive that a company has to respond to the state in other way else than paying taxes.
So what about like politicians in Latin America? Are they mostly China friendly or are there people concerned?
Yeah, most politicians in Latin America are China friendly. I mean, for campaigns, I would say like pro-market candidates sometimes would say, "Oh wait, China is a dictatorship. We should like sit down and wait a minute and talk about what their influence could be." But most people just say we have to deepen our relationships with China because they have money and they can make us grow. If they grow 6% and we sell all their copper to them, then we will grow 6%. And that's the logic they're using. They don't ask themselves, well, maybe China can like influence us a lot in terms of political views and everything.
Has the crisis in Venezuela like made anybody change their minds about relationships with China?
I think people who speak Spanish have noticed it more. And I say people who speak Spanish because I was on Twitter the other day, like tweeting about Venezuela, and I got into a conversation of two American students, and they were saying like, our country is going to destroy Venezuela and intervene militarily and everything, and United States is bad because of this. And I asked them, do you know about the secret bases China has in Venezuela? You know about the Russian base, that Russia has in Venezuela? And they say, no, that's an imperialist propaganda. But the thing is, if you speak Spanish and you read the news in Spanish, it has been said that China is a big responsible for what is happening in Venezuela because China is going to protect the $50 billion debt they have with Venezuela, what Venezuela has with them.
Now hold on 1 second. Since I don't speak Spanish, what is this about Chinese bases in Venezuela? I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, it is about, I'm talking about China's military support to Venezuela and Russia's military support to Venezuela.
So selling them weapons, right?
Not only selling them weapons, but building infrastructure for military purposes. You know, there are like thousands of Chinese companies in Venezuela building everything.
And are there Chinese troops that are stationed in Venezuela?
I wouldn't be able to say yes because, you know, any information you get from Venezuela can be is either leaked or censored by the government. So,
but is this something common in Latin America that there's
China's?
So much? Yeah, that China is creating so much military infrastructure.
Well, I would have to go back to the 1960s and 1970s where Cuba started to influence all Latin American left states. And yes, it is common for Latin American countries to receive support from more powerful states. Either they are from the United States, for example, or for a Chinese government or Russia's government or anything. And the thing is, Venezuela is in such a bad state that they don't have any option, and Maduro is such a monster that he wouldn't care if China gets any of their military forces to Venezuela to protect their oil. And that's what's happening. China and Russia are selling lots and lots and lots of guns to Venezuela since like 10 years ago. So that's a fact. I can say it like...
So that's the other side of the economic relations between Latin American countries and China, that China will protect its interests, even if that's not necessarily in the interests of the people of those countries, as in all the people in Venezuela that Maduro is using those Chinese weapons against.
Yes. The thing is, China has presented itself as a pragmatic state, and their speech is what Xi Jinping said when the reforms era achieved like 40 years. He said, no one can tell China what to do. That China needs the world and the world needs China. And they have presented themselves like this state that wants to change, that wants to save the world, that wants to clean the environment, that wants to support development in countries, and then wants to be pragmatic. And they say, well, it doesn't matter if our system is communist or authoritarian, because we don't want that for you. You can have the state you want to, and we just want your money. That's it.
And copper and avocado and cherries and salmon.
Yeah. So you can have a democracy if you want. That's what they have always said. That's how they present themselves to any other country. And if you ask, for example, any businessman of China, they will tell you, well, you know, when you have money, it's not that bad. You can buy whatever you want. You don't feel this authoritarian state. But on the other hand, when I was a journalist on the Mercurio, that's the biggest newspaper here in Chile. I was in charge sometimes of the international economics area. And once I had to make an interview to a Hong Kong businessman. I won't tell his name for protection. Mm-hmm. And we were recording and I asked him why does Hong Kong has that much big relationship with Chile? And he said, can you stop the recording? And I said, yeah, well, you can say enough if you want. No, you have to stop recording. Okay, and I put my cell phone away, and he told me, well, you know, Hong Kong seems really free and really open, and we were supposed to tell whatever we wanted to, but the thing is, China is taking over Hong Kong, and if I tell you that what you're asking me to, and that goes out in the news, then the ambassador of China is going to see it, and then I might not be able to come back to China in a normal state. And I was shocked because obviously China shows itself as this really comprehensive country, pragmatic, that wants only peace for the world. But when it comes to facts, it manipulates, it makes you stop. it makes you get be quiet. And I'm not even mentioning what it does to its own people, because that's awful.
But so you're saying Hong Kong is a good example of what happens when you have these kind of economic relationships with China. Even though there's a promise of freedom and independence and democracy.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Hong Kong's a little different because China's directly in charge of Hong Kong. I don't think they're like, Chile, you want to be part of one country, two systems?
Yeah. It'll just be one country, one system someday.
Someday soon.
But you know, in order to save taxes, many Chinese businessmen take all their wealth to Hong Kong, and then they make their investments from Hong Kong to the world. So it's really common, for example, for a small country to have as much as Chinese investment as Hong Kongese investment, because it's actually all Chinese investment, but the Hong Kongese is like a tax-free investment.
So since, you know, it seems like the Chinese interest in Latin America now is just growing, and people are seeing just more like the positive side of it right now, what do you think is going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years with China and Latin America?
I think it depends on both China's willing to use its power in Latin America and Latin America's willing to enhance its relationship with China. The first thing is, I think China has interests in Latin America mostly because natural resources. I wouldn't say it has like political interest today. It could have. They have cultural interests that is different. They want the world to see them like the best country in the world. And what they want to is to prove the world that their system is the best one. So if you take that speech to a place like the United States, what you're going to get is Donald Trump cutting any relationship with China, putting taxes or the trade war and anything. But the thing is, American economies don't have that power or that ability to say no to China. So even if we have like a good relationship now, there is nothing that tells me that China is not coming tomorrow to say, okay, so if you want to keep trading with us, it's not just trade, but you have to, our companies have these regulations. So we want our companies to have the same regulations in Chile. That could happen. That hasn't happened yet. Also, Chinese workers that come to Chile, for example, Huawei workers always complain because of their working conditions, because Chinese don't respect foreign working laws. So that's the first one. That depends on what China will want from emerging economies to tomorrow. And I think they have plans, because the One Belt, One Road project is not just trade. It's obviously not just trade. They wouldn't be investing in Ethiopia and Kenya and the BRICS if it was only trade. And the second part is what Latin America wants from China, because now we are in a really difficult situation in Chile. I will talk on this topic about Chile because we have already a third of our trade connected to China. So what we have tried to do in the last years is try to find other investment partners and trade partners, for example, the Philippines. Philippines is not a good example. Indonesia, or Europe. We have like trying to get our relationship with Europe better. And now with the UK, if the Brexit comes out, they have like come a lot to Chile to ensure better relationships. But the thing is, we still depend on copper. So if no one buys our copper but China, we don't have many other options. The thing is, I think the danger there is to China to start to be the owner of public infrastructure in Latin American countries. That's a really big problem because of what I told you earlier about the Huawei tower cells, cell towers. And also because of the political influence. Because if you have businessmen are by far the most like far right political sector in Chile. They are like, yeah, they are like really, really sometimes extremist, but most of them are classical liberal and neoliberal or whatever, however you want to call them. So if they're telling you, okay, so you know, in China we don't have crime, we could replicate their system, then you have a problem because in the future you could have Latin American countries trying to replicate some characteristics from the Chinese system.
Oh, like the Xinjiang model.
Yeah, the Xinjiang model. So it could start, for example, with lots of cameras in the streets, and then go to internet censorship, and then go to lots of cops on the streets, and then go to, okay, so private property only exists in cities, and now the countryside is all public. I don't know. There are many things that could happen, and I think it's dangerous because in Latin America, as I told you, the private sector has always been really pro-open market and democratic and pro-liberal, classical liberalism. But if they say, okay, you know, we could be like China still making money, and then you will have a problem. Well, in Chile, we're like local governments are starting to buy Chinese drones to surveillance purposes in local neighborhoods. We are actually really concerned about it here in Chile, because you can see who you thought was your ally telling you have to replicate the Chinese model.
Oh, that's interesting how other Latin American countries are pressuring other Latin American countries to do this.
Yes. And it's also because of the competition. You don't want, for example, Peru to surpass you because we have been like rivals a lot of time. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Difficult choice, I understand.
Definitely.
I'm actually really concerned about Xiaomi coming to Chile.
Yeah, I have not heard much about Xiaomi other than it being like an iPhone knockoff.
It is. They have from cell phones to wash machines.
Really?
Yeah.
Now if they can make a cell phone that also doubles as a washing machine.
Yeah, and they have like this big data business. For example, if you have the Xiaomi band or the Mi band, you can take all the data out of there and then you can buy a scale from Xiaomi and they can measure your body fat and partner it with your Mi band and then they send information to your app and tell you, okay, so you are like heavier than 50% of the users of this app. And it's not only that, because they have all the information about you and you have all the information about other users. It's like the WeChat app for walking and measuring steps.
Oh, great.
And you can see how much do your partners walk every day.
Wow, so it's like a Fitbit, but with much lower privacy standards.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And a low price.
And really, isn't that the key? As long as it doesn't cost very much money, it's probably better.
Yeah. Also, you have this latest innovation for Xiaomi. It's like an Apple Watch, Apple TV for old TVs. And they can actually know anything about you and what you're watching and everything. And everything is in Chinese.
Well, something to look forward to. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Sasha. That was very enlightening and scary, as often our podcasts are. So if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your work, where would they go? You mentioned you had a Twitter handle.
Yeah, well, my Twitter is my name dot my surname, Sasha.Hanick.
Do you want to spell that out?
S-A-S-C-H-A dot H-A-N-N-I-G. And that's basically my Twitter, my Instagram, and my Facebook. Also, you can find my work on our webpage for my work. We are a think tank, a Chilean-based think tank that promotes democracy values and free society values. And we are really concerned about the Chinese topic on Latin America. And the name is Fundación para el Progreso, in English, Foundation for Progress. You will spell it fppchile.org. So that's it. That's where you can find my work.
Well, great. Thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
And thank you to everyone listening to this episode of China Unscripted. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Gnezda.
And we'll talk to you next time.